It's the Afternoon Underdogs on 790 KRD. Now, here's Tony Bonetti and Dave Jennings.
You're talking in the real election, November the 8th, right? Yeah. Here's the problem. We underperformed among voters who did not like President Biden's performance. Among independents and among moderate Republicans.
There you go. More proof that turtles do talk.
So too much chaos. Too much negativity. And we turned off.
It's hard to pay attention to what actually he's saying because you're staring at his mouth. And you're just like, he survived. I swear to God, his story is amazing. I mean, he knows when to shut up, let everybody talk, and then he just walks in and drops the mic and does what he wants. It's Mitch McConnell.
It's very slow, but he does it.
Yeah, well, it's gotten slower over the years. And definitely Mr. Trump has aged him over the last 4 or 5 years. All right, folks, our boy is back after 45 minutes of sleep, and you look better than Tony Cruz. So I say commend you.
Yeah, it was 2:30 when I finally got to bed, and I kind of lingered for a little bit. I still hyped up, and then the alarm was at 3:45.
Okay, yeah. All right. I don't know when Friendsgiving became a thing.
What the heck is that?
It's been a thing for a while, and it's dumb.
Okay, it's become...
What is it?
Okay. So we do the Thanksgiving with family. So for
yes.
So and then I guess when we were younger, we would meet for drinks during Thanksgiving week. Remember the Wednesday before Thanksgiving was like the biggest night for bars in town, right?
Yeah, it's supposedly the biggest drunk night of the year.
Remember Patrick's was huge on Thanksgiving.
But Patrick Starr.
But this isn't that. This is friends group under 30, and they actually have a meal. Like, they all call each other. They say, bring this, bring that, whatever. And, like, both my kids, 17 and 19 years old, are doing a Friendsgiving where they're bringing food and they're meeting at someone's house and they're doing Thanksgiving, but just their friend group. And I said, I didn't hear Friendsgiving until last year.
I didn't hear Elf on the Shelf until 5 years ago.
Right.
It's been a tradition forever. No, it hasn't.
No, it hasn't.
You just made it up yesterday.
The book came out like 15 years ago.
Yeah, there's some retail store made that up.
Brilliant, by the way. Yeah. Last year I barely heard anything about it. It was like Friendsgiving. I don't know what. This year, almost everybody that I run across is going, oh, we're doing a Friendsgiving. I guess, like today, we're doing worker giving.
Yeah, I don't mind this one. Anything that gets young people together and off their phones and they talk to each other isn't a bad thing.
Amen. But Friendsgiving apparently is a thing, and it's just another example that if you're not invited to one, how are you going to feel bad over the holidays? So there you go.
Well, that's I would rather not be invited to any of them.
Well, you know, in grade schools now, you can't invite people to birthday parties.
Oh, no.
Unless you invite everybody.
We've had to go through that because if you do the selective invite, it's like trying to smuggle secrets out of Russia. You got to like underhand the notes and like signals.
Well, I got to tell you, with social media, the advent of social media, I agree with this rule because I thought it was weird when Holy Trinity did it, my kids' grade school. And I said, what? What do you mean we have to keep it a secret? But then I get it because everyone knows where the kids are on social media and all that stuff. It's not the same world that we grew up in. And I get it.
Not friends with everybody.
No, that's not the world that people want to have, Dave.
I don't care what they want to have.
They want everybody to have friendships in school.
I didn't get invited to anything, and I turned out all right.
Did you?
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got a deer squatchy for Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay.
I imagine Squatch is a lot of fun at a family gathering. This is Kari. She says, Dear Squatchy.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello, Kari.
A few months ago, my cousin told me that she's been seeing another man, she's planning on leaving her husband.
Oh, well, that part's not so good.
Now, things that our grandma has said make me believe that she also knows this. Now we're all going to be together for Thanksgiving, including my cousin, her husband, and their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that everything is going to come to a head. I don't know if I should try and head off any conflict by talking to my cousin and my grandma, but I'm freaking out worrying that our family gathering is going to end in major drama. Should I not worry about it or try to do something?
No, I think you should sit back, pour yourself a beverage.
And shut the hell up.
Get your phone out, because you're about to get the best family video ever. Well,
so drop the bomb, you're saying.
Just sit there and let it play out.
The video would be great. But why is he assuming that they're going to do the announcement at the get-together?
I think do I understand this correctly that there's some concern that grandma might...
They think she already knows also.
Yeah,
she might say something because grandma don't care.
Yeah, because grandma's at that age now where she's just saying stuff. Correct. And whatever happens, happens.
She strikes me, there are people that when they find something out, they can't keep it to themselves. They can't have news and not be the one to drop it. It's driving her crazy to know this.
Yeah. Well, look, have a cup of shut the hell up and have a good Thanksgiving.
It's none of your business.
It's none of your damn business. And stay out of it after it goes down. Stay in the corner or ask, where's the coats? Thank you. Mm-hmm. And you pull a 1-2-3 Johnny.
Yep.
Or watch the show and then...
Or it's called an Irish.
And then burn rubber. Yeah.
What else is... When you do a 1-2-3 Johnny, it's also called an Irish...
Two-step?
It's an Irish two-step.
Dubstep?
Where you just got to leave a party without telling anybody.
Apparently this couple did burn rubber, Squatch, because there are two kids.
Yep. All right.
Leaving a party without telling anyone, that's pretty much my...
That's the 1-2-3 Johnny. Yep.
I had no idea it was a name. It was for me. It was just called...
It's an art form.
Exit strategy.
I was famous for it in the 90s. 1-2-3 Johnny.
You still do it.
Yes, I do.
Wait, he was just talking 30 seconds ago.
Yeah, I'm gone. Where's Vanetti?
Before anyone else could talk, he leaves.
Yeah. All right, so lead story last night, but not surprising, Chief Shields will be out. She is resigning effective in January when the mayor is out. Also, no one's surprised by that. This, when the new mayor comes in, he or she wants to have their own...
Bring their own people.
Yeah, their own police chief.
I mean, that's standard operating procedure. I don't know that that's... People are going to read into that as some sort of an indictment or, you know, a mark on her tenure, but... I mean, I think we talked about this when she took the job. Is who wants to come to Louisville for 2 years? Because everybody knew it was going to be a 2-year job.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a new mayor. And now we have that mayor. And that mayor, he says that she approached him and voluntarily offered the resignation.
Now, she took the job because she wanted to rehab her resume a little bit after Atlanta.
Well, yeah.
I mean, exactly right.
You know, she found herself in a category with General Sherman. As being one of the only other people responsible for Atlanta burning.
No, it was a perfect marriage. Mm-hmm. She needed to rehab. It's like Bobby Petrino at Western Kentucky. Needed a rehab? No, I'm not comparing it.
Go camp out there for a couple of years. I think she did as good as she could under that mayor.
Correct.
Are you telling me that Chief Shields has taken the head coach job at...
No, Arkansas. Western? Yeah, Western. No. What I'm saying is...
Just for 2 years.
Yeah, so she did well for herself. And mm-hmm. I like her. I do. And she did what she could under this mayor. That still had his thumb on her and saying, no, you're not going to do this. I am still effecting policing policy, which to me.
Look, she got dealt a...
is crazy.
And this is probably describing it very lightly, but she got dealt a pretty lousy hand. And I think that history should reflect that she handled that pretty well, mm-hmm. all things considered.
Well, we'll see. He's going to open up. I think you'll have a better list of candidates this year now that Greg is gone. So I think there will be like, well, if you have a new mayor that's willing to actually want police to be police, then I think you'll get a better set of candidates. But I'm not sure about that.
The one name that seems to keep coming to the surface is David James. But I don't think he wants to be police chief. I think he wants to be public safety chief.
I don't know. What's the other one pay?
Yeah.
I don't know. The public safety chief's like a cabinet level thing.
I understand community policing, and that has to be a part of things, but I want to hear some law and order talk from Mayor Greenberg also. Not just we need more money for this and more money for that and a commission to study this, and let's do some policing.
He's got one name that would make us all happy.
Yep, Rick Sanders.
That's it.
Who was on this show and said, look, I'm independent. I've worked for Democrats and Republicans. I want to clean up the streets.
I've been registered.
That's it.
He said, I'm registered independent for years. I don't go either side. So he hires him. He really heals a lot and would be the savvy play right out of the gate. And he can't drag his feet either. He's got to make a decision on the police chief as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. But with every politician, both sides of the aisle, there's always a bit of ego that comes with that. And with that is, well, do I want the guy who was basically tethered to the guy I beat? And there are some politicians, and now I don't know Craig Greenberg well enough to know if he falls in this camp, but there are some politicians that that suggestion would just set them on fire.
He's the Democratic mayor of Louisville. If anything proved that the Democrat will always be a mayor in Louisville, it was this last race.
Mm-hmm.
He can do whatever he wants. He's on the Democratic ticket. No one's going to run against him. He's the guy. He can do whatever he wants, and he will be the mayor in the next thing if he wants to run, in the next term if he wants to run. It is proven a Republican cannot win in this town for mayor.
If and it hasn't since at least the 60s.
It's proven in our lifetime since the late 60s. So I'm sorry. If anybody was going to win this time, it was Bill Dourif, and he did not. So to me, it doesn't matter.
Now, there are Democratic mayors, and we all talk a lot about the liberal cities on fire and all of this, but there are big towns like Boston, San Diego that are perfectly safe and have Democratic mayors.
Yeah.
It can be done.
Sure.
It's law and order. It's crime. It's not party politics.
Sometimes it's
don't
common
make
sense.
It that.
It's well, common
it's,
sense.
Of course it is.
Well,
these Chris Lees, these reality people, yes, they defrauded banks and they got some money, but they're doing a decade in prison. And we have these people that should have been in jail that are killing other people.
You see, I mean,
it's so backwards.
Did you see that? That couple, you talking about the TV couple?
Yeah.
Yeah, they looked weird. I'm okay with
no,
them being
no,
in
but,
prison.
But I mean, they're going to do like a dozen years in prison.
Yeah.
And people that, you know, the guy in Waukesha that plowed through people should have been in jail a long time ago and stayed in jail. So violent criminals are getting out while people that are stealing money aren't. I'm not saying that they shouldn't go to jail, but it's a little backwards when the violent criminals don't stay very long. That can be fixed. That's common sense.
The other lead story, which should be the lead in everybody's newscast, is a federal judge in Manhattan has agreed to unseal the names of several quote-unquote John Does.
Oh, yes.
In the lawsuit involving Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell.
This is why people were worried about people turning up dead.
Hmm,
like one guy who did not commit suicide in prison.
Magically after the election. Public interest outweighs the privacy of every person associated to this case, and the media should be covering this story way more, end quote. I'm sorry, they're right. And it shouldn't be just several John Does.
Everyone.
The whole damn list. And we already know who's on the list. We already see the dozen pictures with Epstein and these guys. It's Clinton. It's Trump. It's the Prince Andrew. It's all these powerful people. They were regulars with Epstein. They're sick. It's gross. And they all need to be outed. Sorry.
What they're going to do is what Major League Baseball did with their tough steroid policy. They kind of hit the minor leagues for a little while with 50 and 100 game suspensions. Well, now we can't suspend these guys. They're worth too much money. Let's send a warning shot. So they're going to go through and say, nah, he's too big. These guys down here, release their names. We're not going to get them all.
Got any thoughts on that, Sasquatch?
No, I mean, I think he's dead on. The system is what it is.
It's a shame because Jackie and I were watching this story on, it was on Prime or whatever, and it was about a brothel in the 18th century, so it was 1780.
Oh, well, your TV watching must just be a bucket of fun.
I love historical stuff. So
it's the era of hygiene.
But historical brothels.
Yeah, right. So, but the point is, this undercurrent of they kept trying to get the youngest and kids for the most powerful people in London, like all of the royal family, the constables, whatever, all of the powerful people in London, all they wanted were kids. And it was just like, I looked at, and this was exactly the time the Epstein stuff was happening. And I was like, we are how many hundreds of years later? And it's still going on.
And Prince Andrew did this.
And it's still going on. I don't get it. I don't understand.
You have all the money in the world and could get plenty of adults to have a relationship with you.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, I don't get it.
The best tweet that came out of the Queen's funeral was somebody took a screenshot of Prince Andrew walking behind the Queen's casket.
Yeah.
And they added the London Police Department and said, there's a very openly pedophile right behind the Queen's casket. Yeah. Go get him.
The whole royal family's a bunch of douches.
Money and no accountability.
Nope.
Yeah.
That's Aaron Rodgers.
That's right.
Aaron Rodgers the king of England?
They were loved when England was going through the Second World War and they needed them, and they were a sign of the backbone and stiff lip and let's go. Let's all go get this done. But after that, they all just became drunks and go hunting. That's all they do.
Humans.
They drink. And what I'm sure they sometimes they were like, Joke of the day, please.
Yep. Okie dokie. Got a few of them for you, gents.
All right, let's see how we're doing here. See how we're doing.
Fellas.
Yes.
Hey, what's up, D?
What you guys doing?
Hanging out, doing a show.
What's up?
Mm-hmm.
What is the name of a dinosaur with a large vocabulary?
I should know this.
Is it a vocabulosaurus?
Go ahead.
Why, that's a thesaurus.
Oh, yes. Thank you. We got it. We figured it out. Bing, boom, boom.
Fellas.
Yes.
Hey, DJ.
Name something red that's bad for your teeth.
I don't know. What's red and bad for your teeth?
A brick.
Ah!
No!
And fellas.
Yay, yes. Finally.
What is the reason why orphans are not good at playing baseball?
Oh,
I don't know.
They can't find home.
Oh, damn it. All right. That's it. Jokes of the day. November 22nd, if you believe it, 2022.
It's JFK Day.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, we have a song about that.
Oh, don't make me do it.
Don't, please don't do it. Back after this.
Dress up like a $1 million trooper. Trying hard to look like Gary Cooper. Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in the midst.
Hey, Dwight Whitten for my friends at Pabst Beef Jerky. I take Pabst Beef Jerky with me everywhere I go. Sits in the passenger seat right here in my Jeep Wrangler. Pabst Beef Jerky is the perfect snack for those of us that love the outdoors. Plus, it's the perfect snack to take with you everywhere you go. It's not going to melt and get all over your upholstery. No, it's going to be right there for you. And it's going to give you that perfect protein snack with none of that sugar crash. Pabst Beef Jerky is local, made right here in Louisville. And they give back to Louisville with every bag that's purchased. But the main reason I love Pabst Beef Jerky, it's the most delicious jerky you're ever going to taste. Hand sliced, hand seasoned, hand smoked right here in Louisville, Kentucky. Find your favorite flavor. By the way, mine is the iconic Grippo's barbecue flavor, but find yours at PabstJerky.com.
Our news guy sounds like he's on lewds.
Think he is.
Well, he got 45 minutes of I'm going to lay down for a while, not sleep. So he hasn't slept since yesterday traveling with Bellarmine to go see Bellarmine.
He got to walk out with the team into Cameron Indoor Stadium. That's pretty cool.
What was lewds? Was that like Valium or something?
I'm not sure what they are. They always talked about them during 70s cop shows.
Right. The 1970s was right. You got a lewd?
What is that?
He's on lewds, dude.
Lewds, dude.
I don't know what that is.
A birthday boy today, not Bruce Springsteen, but Steve Van Zandt, the guitar player for the E Street Band. Little Steven is 72.
Also a very accomplished actor.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's right, he did The Sopranos.
Oh, that's right. And a couple days from now, Pete Best will be 81. Does anyone else know the not drummer for a band?
Yeah.
More than Pete Best?
Yeah, no one.
The guy before Ringo.
But you know what? When you're the Beatles and you just... I mean, think about how many greatest of all time people have an era of 8 or 9 years of really successful music, and then before and after, nothing.
Yep.
Right? And the Beatles did it for like 30. I mean, it's just, they cranked it out.
I mean, they essentially, their window is like 8 years. I mean, they hit in what, 64?
No.
And then by 71,
well,
that was it.
They hit in America in 64. So early 60s. So let's say 1960 in England.
When they were the Quarrymen.
And then the last, what was the gig? Was 70...
And let's be honest, who rocks more than the Quarrymen?
Well, you're right. It is about 12 years.
That's it. Not even real. I mean, that's it.
When was the last gig in San Francisco on the roof? Was that 69 or...
Something like that.
No, it couldn't have been just 10 years.
But these were the era of two albums a year kind of
thing. Right. No.
Now
right.
A band does every 3 or 4 years they put an album out.
Yeah, that's true. No. USA wins their opening match in the World Cup yesterday.
They did not. They drew.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought they won.
No, they tied 1-1.
Oh, I kept seeing this. Yay, USA. I was like, what?
No, they played a team that hasn't been in the World Cup for like 64 years and tied them.
People don't like this team for some reason or something. They're very young. I bet you they do well since no one likes them. They went with a group of very young soccer players. So this time around, instead of the veterans. So I don't know. I mean, I am regurgitating what some talking head said on TV.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the makeup of the team is.
I mean, the U.S. usually advances after they draw in the first game. Not the results we expected against Wales, with England coming up on Friday. Also not the results we liked last night with Louisville and Arkansas. And Larry Benz, I'm sure, saw the game. Are you in Hawaii, Larry?
No, he's not.
I am not in Hawaii. I've been there to the Maui Classic before with U of L and did not make it this year. But, you know, I was surprised. There are a lot of fans there.
I was overjoyed. I was overjoyed. Yeah. That's the one thing that Jackie and I said while we watched it. I was like, boy, the crowd is awesome because we haven't had that crowd at a home game in a while. And you know what? They played the team, I thought, played for 30 minutes.
And then stopped.
Because of the crowd. Like, they forgot what a raucous, loud environment against a good opponent was like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the same thing. You know, we just have to accept that, you know, since 2015 and a couple months in 2017, you know, we weren't. But other than that, we've had the death penalty since 2015. You know, all those years we've been on probation, and it's taken its toll. And we're a complete startup. We're worse than a startup because we have a lot to overcome because our competitors have gotten stronger during this time. I'm confident in Kenny Payne, and I'm confident in the university for sure, and the athletic department for sure. But we have to keep reminding ourselves that, you know, we got here the honest way or the dishonest way through as being a somewhat victim of the NCAA delayed policies. And, you know, that's unfortunate.
I understand the talent gap, and we all understand that. And the transfer portal was a bust this year because who's going to come here if you might go on probation a couple of months from now? However, you see teams like Bellarmine never quit against Duke despite the final score. This team quit, Larry, and that was disappointing.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. You got a first-year coach who inherited a team whose coach, you know, basically was gone, you know, mid or towards the end of the year last year. And so I'm quite sure that the issue is not physical, that it's quite mental. You're dealing with confidence issues. You're dealing with scars from the past and how they were coached in the past. You know, with very few exceptions, he's not recruited any of these kids. So there's a learning curve to all of it. And I think a decent analogy would be, you know, our football team's defense. I know this is going to sound like a strange metaphor here, but, you know, if you look at how we played at the beginning of the year and, you know, ultimately culminating in a loss to Boston College, our defense was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had about 8 return starters, of which I think 5 of them actually started, and the other were transfer portal players. Those transfer portal players had to learn our system, had to learn the community, the coaching. They had scars from their past, right? So they did gel, and once they started to gel, I mean, our defense is carrying this team right now. They just are. And I think the analogy that works for me is that we're going to have to do the same thing in basketball, and even on this current team, they will get better. They will, and we'll get some transfer players in next year. We'll be better. And that's what we have to do. You know, we have a saying in our company that is measurable progress, reasonable time. And so that's the standard that I'm going to apply to the basketball team.
To me, you know, Dave and I did sports for a long time, and 2 + 2 = 4 for a long time. I'm not sure in today's college athletics that 2 + 2 = 4 anymore. There's just too many dynamics, different dynamics.
Especially at North Carolina.
Just to, well,
they don't
if,
go to
you're,
class.
If you're in a math class at North Carolina, 2 + 2 = 6.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'll give you an example. Like Luke Hancock was a transfer in 2012. And he was on the bench because he had to transfer and he got a shoulder injury. But Rick had played him up as he's the best player on our team in practice. We haven't seen him. So we thought this guy was going to be Rex Chapman when he hit the floor. Well, he wasn't. And we, and on our show specifically, we defended him saying he just got here. He's got, just got over shoulder injury. This is Rick's doing, not Luke's doing. Relax. But Luke had a great answer at the press conference. He just said he was much more mature. Luke was always much more mature than anyone than of his age. And he said, you know what? He goes, there's no pro teams in this town. I get it. He goes, we are the pro athletes here. He goes, and we all, we play in a pro arena. He goes, I get the criticism. I don't mind it. And we are. There are no pro teams. So we do treat the coaches and the players like they are professionals. But the players are not. They're student athletes. But, and I get it. I'm rambling here at this point. But I will say, I get that he says he wants to change the culture. I'm not sure you can change the culture in this dynamic of cobbling a team together every single year, right? Like, it, look at Arkansas. That whole team he played yesterday was new. You got 3 5 stars and a couple of 67s and a 75 and a couple of veterans. But that's a whole new team from last year in Arkansas. But they looked great. I'm not sure you can, quote-unquote, change the culture if the culture is different every 12 months. Am I wrong, Larry Benz?
You know, I don't know. I think you defend a good argument. I think, and let me pile on it for a little bit, in that I don't know if the student athlete coming to major universities for basketball are interested in the facilities and locker room anymore. The reality is it's been an arms battle for years, and our facility is just as good as anybody that is out there. But what is different is, you know, they're looking for money. They're looking for NIL opportunities, mm-hmm. and other kinds of things. And so that game has to be played. If that is the case, I think U of L is going to be near the top because, you know, we didn't have to spend much money on NIL this year. And yet I think, you know, Kenny Payne is a prodigious fundraiser. And so I think, you know, can you create team unity, collaboration, and thus culture, you know, out of that? What does culture really mean in that sense? So, you know, I am confident that, you know, we can be elevated to the top of the game here. But your point about Arkansas is a very good one. But how did they do it? They did it with a very charismatic coach who knows how to play the game in a community where they don't have any college, any pro sports either. And so I think that actually, you know, can be used in our favor. I think we have a lot of similarities to an Arkansas. And, you know, we'll see. I just think you're right. There's this whole set of different dynamics. How will NIL play out over the next several years? There's one school of thought is it's going to end up being like professionals. You know, there's this very small percentage of professionals that get endorsements. That get large money endorsements, and they're likely going to be a very small percentage of college athletic, you know, the student athletes, and they're going to probably be at the key schools. These schools are getting to go from 70 to 100 million in media rights. They don't even need to raise, they don't even need seat licenses anymore, right? They can tell their fans, look, we don't need your money, give it to the collective. So I think that could be a dynamic that plays out a bit. We got to be prepared for all those scenarios. And I am confident that we have, you know, we're going in the right direction, but man, it's just a tough, slow, you know, it's a crawl, you know, walk, run, pace.
Yep. You kind of hint at something with, you know, only really a hand. We changed the rules in college basketball for a handful of players that could make money. We really have. So it's kind of ironic. Years ago, we're doing the show, and Cal only has one title, and every year it's a new team. You don't know the names on the back of the jerseys anymore. And even Kentucky fans were saying, I kind of miss getting to know these players. And then Krzyzewski came along and did the Cal one and done thing and won a title. And we thought that was going to kind of go away. Now everybody has to do the one and done thing at the top level. So we thought Cal's way that was so successful was going to kind of go away. Now it's here for everybody, here to stay.
No, that's exactly right. I think the other game changer will be if and when, because I think they've already decided they're going to do that. I don't know what's going to get acted upon, that they do away with the requirement, and there's no such thing as a one and done, that you can go right back from high school to the pros. Yep. What that's going to do is put a bigger premium on a coach and their staff. And I liken it to the NFL. It's not the coach, it's the general manager and the director of personnel and the scouts and the negotiators. It's a team, and you can't just be an X's and O's person. You got to understand the transfer portal, and you have to do, you know, lots of things, and people will be, you know, creating artificial intelligence around all of this. And you know, I think from a fan perspective, in certain ways, it can become more interesting because it's no longer going to be the few schools that, you know, where they did under the table or honestly that got these top one and dones. You know, Patino never had a one and done his whole career. I mean, Donovan Mitchell, if there's anyone who could have been a one and done, it was him. He decided to stay a second year. And I think you're right, but, you know, what happens if the NBA or when they change that rule, then you're going to have coaches that are going to need a bigger skill set. And so you have to look at the organ, who's their general manager, who's their director of personnel, who's monitoring sort of the waiver wire within it of potential kids that could come over. Yeah. And then let's also remember COVID year is going to go away. We're also in a little bit of goofiness in that sense because they were granted an extra year, which I think is throwing a bigger loop. Probably in football than basketball because if they were that good, they would.
You got guys that are playing their sixth or seventh year.
Right. Oh, yeah. Three different schools in some cases.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jordan Travis still has eligibility at FSU.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And he was at Louisville for a couple of years.
Yeah, I know. No, it's crazy. Look, I think last night Dave thinks they quit. I think that they punched themselves out. I think that they wore themselves out. That's what great boxers do, is that in the second half, Arkansas just has talent. They're younger. And they were just like, oh, these guys are punched out. And they saw it, and they took advantage of it. So I'm not sure they quit, but more than they were just gassed. And they were just like, oh, we can't beat these guys. We gave our best shot. In the 30-minute mark, we were within five, and then that's the best we could do today. And then the great teams do what? We watched Louisville do it to other teams for decades. In the last 7 or 8 minutes, 26-point win. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. We'll end it with this, and we'll talk about pro rehab.
And the Governor's Cup a little bit.
Oh, and the Governor's Cup. Yes, that is, of course, this weekend. Rick Pitino introduced his recruiting class when he dubbed it the bridge year. You brought it up, Larry, which was Gorgie, which was not the recruit we wanted. We wanted his buddy.
Russ Dickulis.
Russ and the Bullet. Three players. Maybe there was a fourth. But we all said this is the end of Rick Pitino. We were leaving the tip-off luncheon saying this is it for Rick Pitino. This is his class. That class. And this is why you never say never. That class won more games than any class in history of UofL. You got a 2-star, a 3-star, and the kid, the short kid from nowhere, Kentucky, came in as a recruiting class, and they won more games collectively as any class in history. So, Larry, you can never, you know, you never know.
That's exactly right. I mean, he is... you know, he's the Pied Piper of development. He really has a special kids that he can develop into tremendous team players and tremendous skill players. You know, I also remember him in light of what you said, whether or not they quit or not. You know, one of the things I remember him saying quite a bit is when you have to make a large comeback and you get to a point where you're, you know, within 1 or 3 or 5 points, you're already so spent.
You're done.
And fatigued. Yeah, you really are. And we had... You know, we had a lot of that, but we also had a lot of bad play. I mean, we had, you know, in the last four games, I think we had like 72 turnovers.
Oh, yeah.
31 assists. And so, you know, it's fatigue, but it's also, you know, we had some really bad exchanges, some bad funks. But that'll get better over time.
All right, Larry, the Governor's Cup. So I feel optimistic about this, the way Louisville's playing now. Kentucky lost to Vandy and probably should have lost to Missouri. But I've seen the last couple of games, and I've seen how dominant Kentucky's been in the trenches. So I have a hard time thinking that's changed drastically in about 11 months. Are you feeling good about this one?
I feel pretty good. I would tell you, I think that the spread on the game is probably fair. I think Kentucky has shown signs that they're really good at times. I mean, they beat a very good Mississippi State team. They played very competitively against Georgia and actually left some points out there. Their quarterback seems to be a little bit healthier. But then again, they also lost to Vandy and they lost to South Carolina. And I don't know. I mean, I think they've had some of the same struggles we've had in terms of consistency, but they've also had, you know, their line does look like it's gotten better. For us to beat them, we have to leverage our defense because it's clearly the strength of the team at this stage. And play and execute well on offense. And I just love what Satterfield has developed himself as a coach in terms of really being able to leverage his offensive play calling around his skill set. Definitely a much different game when Malik's in versus Brock. And, you know, last week we came out and said, you know, we're going to just play grinded out football and rely on our defense and get opportunistic. I think our special teams are, you know, I think they're the best special teams as a whole unit that I've seen at Louisville since the mid-80s, at least, as long as I follow them. You know, when you look at the totality of kickoff return, punt return, field goals, we're pretty consistent there and actually quite good. So sometimes that makes a big difference in these kind of games. I get definitely the edge on that to us. I like our running back situation. I love our defensive line, and this is the best chance we've had to beat them in a number of years. We didn't play them COVID year. The following year, the weather was horrible, and they absolutely embarrassed us.
Yep.
Last year was, you know, embarrassing. Somewhat of the same thing.
No, it was embarrassing. It was. And tackle the quarterback.
We got to play a competitive game. Yep. We got to play a competitive game.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. All right, real quick, since you're a doctor, not that you use them, Dave and I were talking about in the 1970s, cop shows, and people would say, oh, he's hopped up on lewds. What were lewds?
What is a quaalude?
What is a quaalude, right?
Not that you know, but right. You probably heard about
but
it being
a doctor,
in medical profession.
Maybe you prescribe a quaalude. I don't know.
No, I think you're conflating quaaludes with uppers.
Oh,
what they would take were stimulants. Were you know, pharmaceutical.
Oh, it's a nickname.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mean Adderall?
That was they didn't have Adderall back then, but they had, you know, they would use, you know, they had different, it was a street name, you know, obviously, but quaaludes are a barbiturate. So it wasn't really, you know, if they used them as sort of recovery issues, but it was really more about steroids and, you know, the ability to get, you know, a lift as opposed to a downer.
Huh. Yeah, absolutely. So they just changed the name.
Yeah. It's described as a hypnotic sedative.
Oh, nice.
Yes, definitely. So you wouldn't want him taking a sedative for a football game. You'd want him taking an upper.
Great.
Right? So,
oh, I gotcha.
Dude was hopped up on
news,
man.
The uppers had a bunch of different names back then. You know, they're really more of a local phenomenon. But from high school kids to college kids, they would always use the term uppers because, you know, uppers were – They can literally make the range from cocaine to methamphetamine.
I just want you to realize that not every show is going to ask you the origins of quaaludes. I'm just telling you.
If you want to save money, you find an NIL guy who's also a pharmacist.
Okay. All right, exactly. Larry, it's always great to talk to you. Pro Rehab Lou, if you need any physical therapy needs, they will do it for you. They're the best. My wife went to you. She's got an appointment today, I believe. So it's her third or fourth. She had a muscle issue in her hip, and let me tell you, Eric did a fantastic job with her. She was almost pain-free after the first one, but she's doing what you guys said, which was go back for more treatment to make sure it doesn't reoccur, and that's what she's doing. So Pro Rehab took care of my wife. They'll take care of you, too. Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely. Have a great Thanksgiving, guys.
You got it. Larry Benz, Pro Rehab, Pro Rehab Lou. Back after this.
Southern Comfort Hot Tubs, baby. Hey, Dwight Whitten here, and I want to tell you about the favorite part of my day. That's ending my day with my wife in my Southern Comfort Hot Tubs. You're going to love it, too. And right now, you can get 12 months, same as cash, at Southern Comfort Hot Tubs. Go see Ty Gibson and the crew. They want to fix you up. How about this? A brand new hot tub for your family for Christmas. What a way to reconnect with the ones you love. No more tablets or cell phones. It's just you and the ones you love in the hot tub. And you wouldn't believe the health benefits that you get from using a hot tub. Just do yourself a favor and Google health benefits of a hot tub. Then run down the 7501 Preston Highway and get you a Southern Comfort hot tub. Southern Comfort hot tub. You're going to love them.
Today's hero is Patrick H. Brady, Major U.S. Army. Name of the story is Chopper Rescues. The place? South Vietnam, 1968. Reserve officers' training was mandatory at Patrick Brady's college in the late 1950s. He hated it. Eventually, got booted out. He later got into ROTC and was commissioned in the Medical Service Corps after graduation. Brady's first posting was in Berlin as a medical platoon leader, and at the time, the Berlin Wall was being constructed in 1961. Soon, he was eager for new challenges, so he applied to flight school and became a helicopter pilot, and in 1963, he went to Vietnam. Flying UH-1 medevac helicopters, Major Brady was on his second tour of duty as part of the 54th Medical Detachment in Chu Le, when he volunteered to rescue two badly wounded South Vietnamese soldiers in enemy territory on January 6, 1968. Several attempts had been made to get the men out. All had been aborted because of bad weather. When Brady arrived, thick fog shrouded the evacuation site. He descended slowly until he could make out the shape of the trees beyond his rotor blades. Then he used them to orient the craft and move sideways towards the extraction point. Despite the close-range enemy fire, he was able to locate the South Vietnamese soldiers and evacuate them. Now, not long after this rescue mission, Brady was called to another fogged-in area where American casualties lay close to the enemy lines. Earlier in the day, two other U.S. helicopters had been shot down trying to reach the same site. Brady lowered his chopper through the space of the fog, oriented himself by a stream bed to get the wounded out. In total, he made four flights over the next hour to rescue all 39 GIs. Now, on his third mission of the day to rescue more American soldiers, Brady once again put down on a landing zone in enemy territory. During this descent, the controls of the helicopter were hit, but he was able to evacuate the injured anyway. Back at base, he got a replacement helicopter and returned to action. On his fourth mission, he was watching another medevac trying to extract members of the trapped American platoon when a mine exploded nearby, causing the helicopter to leave without the casualties. Brady touched down as close to the marks left by the other craft's skid marks as he could avoid mines. The soldiers were reluctant to cross the minefield, so his crewmen got out to help them. All were brought aboard, except for one who had been carried back on a stretcher by two of Brady's own crew members. They had almost reached the plane when one of the stretcher bearers stepped on a mine. The explosion blew a hole in his helicopter and caused every warning light on the control panel to go on. But Brady managed to get the damaged craft off the ground and deliver the six severely injured soldiers to medical aid. Then he picked up a new helicopter and kept flying. In all, he evacuated 51 men that day. 400 bullet holes were counted in all of the helicopters he flew that day. Back in the United States, Brady was awarded his second Distinguished Service Cross. The award was later upgraded to Medal of Honor, which was presented to him by President Richard Nixon on October 9, 1969. Patrick Brady retired as a Major General in 1993. His daughter Megan followed in his military footsteps, entering the Medical Service Corps. She served as a medic in the 1991 war against Iraq. Since retirement, Brady has supported many service organizations. He serves as the chairman of the Citizens Flag Alliance, a coalition of organizations determined to protect the American flag from physical desecration. Today's hero is Patrick Brady, born October 1st, 1936, in Phillip, South Dakota. He lives in Texas today. The name of the story is Chopper Rescues.
It's the Afternoon Underdogs on 790 KRD. Now, here's Tony Bonetti and Dave Jennings.
Sound is so familiar for me.
One of Duran Duran's first hits, Duran Duran.
Is time before Dave and I partake in our office Thanksgiving potluck.
Mm-hmm.
Which, what did you bring?
A charcuterie board from Lots of Pasta with gourmet meats and cheeses and crackers.
Cool. I brought a kale, apple, and squash salad.
I mean,
yeah, it's delicious, Dave.
I don't get the kale thing.
Depending on the salad dressing, you're fine.
Gotcha. So here's where we try to show our ignorance when it comes to all things pop culture. Willful ignorance, by the way, on our part.
Yeah.
A lot of kids.
Yeah, there's some pop things we don't get. But we're going to try to learn more.
This is click it or skip it. You tell me if I click on it so we learn more about it or blow it off.
Yeah, here we go.
Headline, the Chris Lees sentenced on tax fraud charges.
Yes, click it. These are the two weird, what are they?
I don't know how they ever got a show.
Right.
Just because he's a quirky dude, here's a show.
This is the interior decorator people or what?
I have no idea what they did. I never watched it. I saw the annoying commercials.
There's a million of these shows. I know the other couple, the dark-haired couple that I think operate out of Texas, they have a thing in Target. I mean, you can buy their stuff at Target.
Oh, so. Joanne and Chip.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Why do I know that? Well, that's home improvement stuff.
Right, what happened to this couple here?
Okay, sure, they once lived a glitzy enough life that they got their own reality show, but federal prosecutors proved that Todd and Julie Chrisley financed their Chrisley Knows Best lifestyle with $30 million of money they stole through a bank fraud scheme through tax evasion.
Wow.
They've maintained their innocence, blaming their accountant, who has also been found guilty of tax fraud, for filing false returns. Prosecutors showed the jury something very different. As such, the couple convicted in June of submitting false documents to request loans and using their production company to hide income from the IRS. Todd has been sentenced to 12 years plus 16 months probation. Julie will go away for 7 and also serve 16 months probation and pay restitution.
A lot of people do this. They falsify their worth or whatever to get loans, right? I mean, that's what they do. So, but there's a lot of people that go to jail for this stuff. Tax evasion. The IRS loves to get famous people into jail because it sends a message to everyone else.
That's how we got Al Capone.
Yes.
It wasn't the crime. It was the, it was taxes.
Yeah, it wasn't killing
murders.
People. It wasn't murdering people, right?
Ironically, it's like that now. If you murder someone, you get out in 48 hours, but
tax evasion,
get
you're
the
gone.
IRS. Forget right. about it.
So there you go. They're going to jail.
Headline, it's what's radio, but here's the headline. Jay Leno checks out of burn unit, shares first pick.
No, I don't really care. I mean, he got
it's radio.
Yeah, it's radio, so we'll skip it.
Headline, Michelle Obama grants birthday wish to woman turning 100.
Skip it. I don't.
But what's the wish, though?
Oh,
I mean, does she want her to dance the can-can? I mean, on her husband's grave?
Or
what? That's just it. I don't know why or what the wish was. A South Philly woman gets her 100th birthday wish granted when she gets to meet Michelle Obama. At a birthday celebration hosted by family and friends and attended by local Philadelphia lawmakers, Eloise Brown told everyone that her one wish for that birthday was to meet Michelle. Word made its way to Obama's team, and they sent tickets to Brown for her and her sister to attend a speech that she was giving in Philadelphia while on tour promoting her latest book. After she spoke, she got a chance to meet her and daughter Malia backstage. They were glad to see me, and I was overjoyed to see them. I can't even express it.
Hey, if you can bring a happiness to 100-year-olds, because I think I'm going to be just the grumpiest 100-year-old ever. I'm
the grumpiest 60-year-old, dude.
I mean, I'm 53, David.
No, you'll be the grumpiest, Antoine, when you get to 60.
Oh, no, I won't. I won't care.
No?
I won't care. But once I get to 100 where I'm like, I keep that line keeps coming to my head. Hey, how's life?
Taking forever.
That's my best line now because I'm like, if I get to 100, all my friends are dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what am I doing?
It's where you make new friends, Tony.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, don't close the door.
Baby.
Speaking of closing the door, headline, Morgan Freeman slammed for World Cup appearance.
Why is he slammed for going to the World Cup?
Let's click it then.
Yeah.
Morgan Freeman is getting a red card from fans around the world today as they react to his participation in the World Cup opening ceremony in Qatar. We gather here as one big tribe, and Earth is the tent we all live in, the Oscar world told the world as they watched. This didn't come across particularly well to fans who were upset with how Qatar has banned discussion of the LGBTQ community.
Oh, they ban a lot more than that.
Yes, they do.
But whatever. He wanted to be involved with the World Cup. He did it. And if fans want to dislike that, that's fine.
If you don't want to go see his movies anymore, that's your call.
Yeah, no doubt. If you never want to watch Shawshank again, have fun. I'm going to watch it a million times.
Mm-hmm. Click it or skip it. Headline, Michael J. Fox honored for Parkinson's and his film work.
I couldn't believe the amount of stars that were there that only knew him from Back to the Future. Like, I guess because that's my wheelhouse. Here's what I was thinking about that show. He, on the show, people forget he was the Republican, and he wore a tie and a suit every day, and the parents were hippies. If the parents were hippies, he had portraits of Reagan in his room. And that dynamic was fine, and we laughed at it. I'm not sure if you could do that with the teenage boy as a Trump guy and the others are hippies, right? And that
you should be able to make fun of each other on a show like that.
Yes.
That would be actually healthy for everybody.
Yes.
Not to be so butthurt every time someone makes fun of you.
But I forgot about that, My Little Republican, and the dynamic and how funny that was. And I said, you couldn't do that show today.
If it's written well, you could, but if it offends somebody, you can't.
Yeah, but the amount of younger stars that only knew him from one movie. Go ahead, click
it. So he was honored with the Gene Herschelt Humanitarian Award at the 13th Governor's Awards in L.A. Woody Harrelson presented the award to his Doc Hollywood co-star. I forgot that Woody was in Doc Hollywood. Touting the fact that he's raised over $1 billion for Parkinson's research since he founded his foundation back in 2000.
I think one of the bravest things was when he said when he testified to Congress and he didn't take his medication that morning because it makes you look like a crazy person. And he said, "This is me off when I don't take my meds." And it was America.
Yeah.
It's like OJ. I'm sorry. It's like Magic Johnson and HIV. For me, at least, for Michael J. Fox, was watching him act like that. It was just America went, "Oh, wow."
And then obviously Muhammad Ali with the torch.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Showed some of the effects of Parkinson's. Click it or skip it headline. Alyssa Scott and Nick Cannon pose for final days maternity shots.
Couldn't care less. Skip it.
How many times? I guess because he's doing nothing else but procreating, he has plenty of time to do maternity shots.
It's not his fault that the damn news keeps covering it.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like I want to dislike him, but he's like, I'm not telling the
that's
media.
Right. All I'm doing is just what I was born to do.
That's right.
What's up? She said she wanted it. I said, yeah. Oh, my phone's ringing. I got another one.
Yeah. headline. Kravis may be heading to Tennessee.
Click it. I have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Kravis may be heading to Tennessee.
Lenny,
no, adios, no. California. Hello, Tennessee. Blink 182 drummer Travis Barker seemed to signal that he and his partner Kourtney Kardashian desire to move to the southern state on Instagram. After posing a pic of the couple in a wooded area, Kardashian commented, "Let's move there." Barker answered with an enthusiastic, "Yeah," before telling a commentator who invited them to move to Tennessee that they probably will eventually, although they just bought a house together in Santa Barbara.
Everyone that I know in California loves it.
Of course.
I know that, you know, if you have money in California, it's a great state. But it's not like any other place on the planet.
No.
So if you go from LA or Santa Barbara to Tennessee, there is going to be a culture shock. Think it won't be.
A lot of folks have been moving there in Hollywood and the music industry, so they'll have some people to pal around with.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It'd just be interesting at the bait shop buying lottery tickets. I'd like to see that.
Oh, boy.
But now this could be a reality show, right? The Kardashians moved to Tennessee.
Depends on what part of Tennessee. If you go to Nashville, you'll fit right in because Nash Vegas.
That's expensive now.
Yeah, it's Nash Vegas and everybody there parties every single night. But if you go out to Knoxville or, you know, some small part of Tennessee, it is like going back in time for them, at least.
Click it or skip it. Supernatural star Nikki Acox loses battle with leukemia at 47.
Oh, click it. What happened?
Leukemia. Let's see. Nikki Acox, former actress best known for her role as Meg Masters in Supernatural, died at the age of 47. Her sister-in-law, Susan Robb Sikowski, confirmed the news on social media. Cause of death not officially shared, but she was diagnosed with leukemia more than a year ago. Fans and colleagues have shared their sadness at the news across social media.
And the thing is, I do some stuff with leukemia lymphoma, and they're making such strides with that. I'm shocked to hear this because 90% of diagnosis of leukemia lymphoma blood diseases are, they live with it.
Yes.
They're not cured, but you can beat it. So I'm surprised by that news and thoughts and prayers for sure. And I don't know this person, but there you go.
Headline, click it or skip it. Tough guy Ice-T makes wifey Coco melt with motherhood compliment.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, go ahead.
See the ice thing in the melt? You see what they did there?
I get it.
When Coco Austin visited the Tamron Hall show, the host had a little surprise for her. Coco's husband, Ice-T, sent in a video he took on set of his show Law & Order SVU, in which he praised his wife for being an amazing person, which Coco took in stride, and for being a wonderful mother, and that last one put her in tear mode. Quote, this is a shout-out going to my wife, Coco. You are the most incredible person I've ever met, the nicest person I've ever met, and the best mother of Chanel that anyone could possibly imagine. I love you to death. 22 years, baby, and it gets better every day.
You're not gushy like that, at least with us, with Becky, but you two remind me of them, too, because mm-hmm. I think at one point they said he got sick or he was doing a film or something, and it was the first time they had not spent the day together
right.
in like 9 years or something crazy. And it was like, we see each other every day, and I can't believe that I got to go 2 days in a row without her.
Yeah, we can count on one hand the number of times we've probably been apart.
Correct. So. Yeah. And the Ice-T thing, she runs the show. There's no question about that.
Ice-T and Coco. Beverages covered.
Good for them.
Not
good
fun beverages.
They're cute.
But they're covered.
They are cute.
Couple,
damn it.
I like successful Hollywood couples.
Yes, there's no doubt.
This one kind of intrigues me. One more headline.
Okay.
Click it or skip it. New study reveals Bruce Lee may have died from too much water.
Oh. We all thought it was head trauma because he was cracking those ice blocks with his head. And people
That's
said,
different than drinking the water, isn't it?
Correct. Go ahead. Click it.
Doctors believe they've discovered the mystery behind the brain swelling that caused Bruce Lee's death. The legendary actor died in Hong Kong at the age of 32 from brain swelling from what doctors now say was caused by drinking too much water.
What?
The researchers' findings are far from what people once speculated about his death, including rumors that he was assassinated by gangsters, poisoned by a jealous lover, or even being the victim of a curse. We propose that the kidneys' inability to excrete excess water killed Bruce Lee, researchers write, in an upcoming issue of Clinical Kidney Journal. Got that one? I love it. Subscribe. Ironically, Lee made famous the quote, "Be water, my friend," but excess water appears to have ultimately killed him. They make the case that Lee had multiple risk factors for this, including high liquid intake, factors that could increase thirst, such as marijuana usage, and factors that debilitate the kidney's ability to excrete water, such as prescription drugs, alcohol, kidney injuries, or low solute intake.
I don't. Why is this now? I mean, why?
To sell more kidney magazines, dude.
I guess. But
I mean, every month you got to titillate.
Yeah.
Try to write a kidney magazine before you criticize.
He thought he was cursed. He would have dreams of the warrior coming to get him, and he thought he passed it on to his kid, and dun dun dun, his child died on the set from supposed to be just the thing with the rust.
The thing with Alec Baldwin?
So they thought it was he got shot in the stomach during the filming of The Crow. Was it Brandon?
Brandon Lee.
Brandon Lee was shot.
And then Jet Li.
No, not related.
Still alive.
Not related.
It is. I think.
What?
Isn't he? Jet Li?
No.
Oh, no. He's L.I. Lee.
Yeah.
Not L.E.E. Lee.
No. But it's weird because he thought he had cursed his son, that line had been cursed, and dun, dun, dun. Wow.
Edlin and Edlin decided a couple of years ago it was fair to charge just 1% for their commission. And that has worked out for them and for the customer, which is you. If you're selling a home right now, why wouldn't you sell with Edlin and Edlin? Just go to Edlin.com, find out how much equity you're going to keep in your pocket. On the average price of Louisville, last time I checked was 2 months ago, and it was $300,000. I'm not sure if that's gone up since then. It might have. You will keep $8,000 in your pocket rather than going with someone else in the real estate game. So go with Edlin and Edlin. Call them at 599-2800. 599-2800 or go to Edlin.com.
Birthday.
It is not. This is just Klaus and the Scorpions.
Before we get to our do's and don'ts or horrible things you can do on Thanksgiving, Dave and I have talked about college basketball and how dumb it is.
Yes.
College basketball it didn't turn out to be the premier matchup because Kentucky got destroyed by Gonzaga on their floor. But I sat there thinking there is 60 minutes and there is Sunday Night Football going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And college basketball didn't think, okay, let's look at the schedule and say, like CBS said, no, let's get the Gonzaga-Kentucky game and put it at 3:30 Saturday afternoon, Saturday night maybe, and go up against a football team on like a college football. But if you go up against the NFL in 60 minutes, you're going to lose.
I've said this for years. College basketball needs to shape things up because all it is right now is the NCAA tournament for 95% of the fans.
Yeah, that's right.
For average everyday fans, when they finally get past football, what do they get? They get the same old conference games they see every single year. Yet the Kentucky Gonzagas, the Kentucky Carolinas, all the rivalry games or all the top five, top 10 out of conference matchups get missed because they're trying to compete with football and they will lose every time.
And let's be honest, the sidebars for this game was even bigger because how many times do you recognize college basketball names? You don't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Timmy and you know Oscar. You know Timmy and Oscar for, you know, one for Gonzaga. These are two best front court players in the country going head to head. And it's a true road game for Kentucky. It's number two versus number four. And you stuck it at 7:30 on Sunday night.
And you have a chance to take a West Coast team who's been fairly good for a while.
Yes.
That nobody sees until the tournament and expose them to a primetime audience.
You buried it.
But you buried it against football.
Unbelievable. It's astounding how dumb the people that run college basketball, staring at you, NCAA, coaches, athletic directors, presidents. What are you doing?
Get out of the way of college football. Have some big rivalry games the week in between the end of the playoffs and the Super Bowl. That'll be college basketball's weekend. Nobody watches the damn Pro Bowl, and they canceled it anyway. There are so many easy things that could be done to improve the profile of college hoops.
It's so funny.
And they don't.
It's so funny because everyone complains that baseball's out of date and all that. Baseball's numbers are better than ever. Their TV numbers, their tickets sold, they're fine. But everyone says, oh, baseball's dead. Really? Because that league is doing fantastic. No one complains about NCAA that they're not doing it right. And they have lower numbers every year for 10 years straight.
And we're not going to mention the Louisville game because that was flat out embarrassing last night.
It was.
That team quit.
Ridiculous.
They obviously quit. That was awful. It was a badly coached team. The effort was awful. Once they decided they weren't going to win, they stopped playing. I was embarrassed as a fan to have that on the court.
Did you watch the five or six turnover in a row?
Yeah, oh, the dunk fest.
The dunk fest where it was five or six. They were literally dribbling the ball off their foot.
It was embarrassing.
I stepped on the ball.
And she stepped on the ball.
I believe I'm still
a member of this club. Oh, I've got a list here. Let's get some Thanksgiving music. Let's go. Let's see here. Charlie Brown, Thanksgiving. Oh, yeah.
I like it.
Vince Guaraldi. These are the rudest things, according to etiquette experts at the Huffington Post. Rudest things you can do. Thanksgiving.
Hmm.
Number one, not RSVPing, not RSVPing.
Yeah.
Head counts are important for big meals, so let the host know if you're coming so they can plan accordingly. And don't show up with a plus one without telling them.
You can only eat so much. If people don't show up, you have all this leftover. And you can only do that for a couple of days before you're just like, I'm sick of eating this. I'm not eating this anymore. Throw it away. So, yes, RSVP it. I'm terrible at that. Jackie, isn't that like sort of a gender rule? Women usually RSVP and men are like, what?
We'll show up if we feel like it.
Yeah, whatever.
Whenever we feel like
I'll tell you if I want to.
Ignoring the schedule. I mean, this happens when you have young people in your lives and girlfriends and things, and they have five places to visit. You get them when you get them, but respect the host plans for the day and make sure you know when you're expected to arrive to eat as a group. You don't want to keep a house full of hungry people waiting because you couldn't decide which shoes to wear. No, you just serve it. I don't care if Bill and Connie aren't there yet. You told them 2:00.
We have one section of our family that I've told the people that put it on every year, tell them an hour and a half before it's supposed to happen. Just tell them. And the thing is, they live very close. So it's like, and we just eat. We do go ahead and eat. And if they show up, they show up. But
so if it's 3:00, tell them, oh, yeah, 2:00, turkey time, 2:00.
But the dynamic of all this Thanksgiving has changed so much over the years. Granny ran the show.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone went off what Granny said. There was no negotiation. There was no
Friendsgiving.
No, you showed up at Granny's at a certain time when she told you to, and it was aunts, uncles, nephews, didn't matter.
Everybody.
Everybody showed up. Well, that dynamic changed. Divorce became a bigger issue, and you have all these blended families. Now you have 32 events you've got to go to in two days. I have friends that are like, how many are you doing this year? 8. What?
And one thing you notice, as we get older, nobody eats that much anymore.
No.
So you're planning these meals, a pound of turkey per person. You have a ton of turkey left over.
No, no. They just kind of, you just go for
they
one.
They kind of pick.
Because you're going to another event.
Right.
Yeah.
A Huffington Post etiquette experts say do not bring dishes that require cooking. Hosts often invite people to contribute, but don't expect to show up and take over the kitchen.
No, I disagree. If it's your family and you need to warm up something or you need to finish the meal, to finish the plate up before it's over.
Because sometimes you drive 40 minutes.
Yeah, sorry.
You got to warm it up a little bit.
Yeah, no, sorry. You talk to the person with the kitchen and say, I need to warm this up. When is a good time to pop it in?
And people are reasonable. They'll say, when I take the turkey out, throw it in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Give it 20 minutes. We're
good.
That's
right. That's right.
They say do not, well, this is obvious, do not start tense conversations. Keep religion and politics out of there. Stay with safe topics.
It's fun. Yeah, normally you don't have to say that. I mean, even in my friends group, which I am one side and all of them are on the other, never talk about politics.
No.
Never talk about politics. It's stupid. Most of the time we complain about coaches.
Right. They say do not pry into people's personal business. Do not give parenting advice. Correct someone else's kids or ask intrusive questions. Who does that?
When Jackie and I got back together, if people listening to the show don't realize, Jackie, my wife and I got married in 99. We got divorced in 06.
You're Dick Burton.
And then we got remarried a couple of years later, very happily married for the last whatever. And but when we got back together, there is that one or two of the on the side relatives that were just out in the open going, so what's going on here? I thought you all were divorced. Mm-hmm. What's this? Out loud.
Were they happy for you?
Yeah. I don't think they cared either way.
Do both sides of your family like each other?
Oh, yeah.
Like her family likes you vice versa?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why we got back together. We were not far apart.
Right.
On the negotiation. Plus, when you go out and date.
You don't want to do that
anymore.
And you
realize, you go, oh, God, I can't do this. I'll fix. That's why I tell people about divorce and moving jobs. If you just put the work into the job that you have now, I mean, if you put the work that you're going to put in by starting over somewhere else into the current job, it might pay off to just stay. Divorce is the same way. I'm not talking about infidelity and all that where you have to leave or someone steals money or whatever. But if you're not that far apart, put effort into it, because let me tell you, the effort you're going to put in being single.
I like how you excluded embezzlement there.
Well,
I don't want to offend the embezzlers out there.
Well, you know.
You got a reason there.
And, well, if she going steals
into,
from you.
Going into your pants pockets.
If she steals your retirement, well, I think that's room for divorce.
There's
Dave.
That, of course. I mean, what are you, the Chrisleys?
Wait a minute, what?
Oh, this happens in the summertime, too, with guys in the grill. Asserting yourself in the kitchen without being asked. The host is in charge. Let them to decide how to prepare the food without giving your opinions. That's the guys that always show up, go, looks pretty good, but I'd flip that right now. Go in the house.
We all want to, but we bite our tongues.
Mm-hmm.
We all want to say, ooh, you're going to pull those buns out now, right?
You can see the turkey drying before your eyes.
Yes, yes.
You're going to baste that at all?
Hey, I went over, you cooked the burgers for me a couple of years ago at your house.
Yeah,
I didn't
yeah.
say a word.
Nope.
Just sat there and had a beer with you guys, and we all talked, and I kept looking at the grill. Didn't say a word.
And you said it was one of the best burgers you've had.
It's true. No, it's true. You nailed it.
Yeah.
And it was one of those big, thick.
Yeah, I got them at the butcher shop in Prospect.
The butcher.
Yeah, so you get those thick. I mean, it was like $55 for 8 burgers. I mean, you know they're good burgers. I mean, they were fat and delicious.
But those are hard to cook on the grill because they're 3 inches thick.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm.
Don't assume you can take home leftovers. The people that prepared the food may invite you to take some home, but don't go asking for a doggy bag. Remember the news guy years ago who showed up at one of our nice Christmas parties with Tupperware and went through the line, got his plate. Filled up his Tupperware.
Yeah. That is taught. That's like a DNA thing. I don't think it's his fault. The people that throw our parties, and we do, we beg people to take stuff.
Yes.
What do you need? I'll make you a plate. Take it to whoever didn't show up. My sister goes overboard. She does a hotel buffet every year, and she's begging for us to take giant sacks of this food home.
Yes.
And I'm like, all right, yeah.
Thank you. And finally, this is the awkward one. How do you handle this? Don't hang around too long after dinner.
there's not a clock above people's heads, but there is a, you know, and you, Dave, you know, you've seen us at our house. We just tell people to leave. All right, it's time to go. What? You heard me. It's time to go.
That's right.
People listen.
Well, I got the movie just started.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's the movie starting for us.
It's Lord of the Rings. You're not hanging for this.
No, people come to me to be rude. I'll be rude. Hey, people in the kitchen, get out. That's it.
Yep, that's it.
That's one thing that reminds me of my old man. That's one thing I can do the old man did.
That's right.
Just walk in the room and go, hey, you out. People, get out. Walk out.
There you go. Huffington Post, the rude things you should avoid.
Yeah.
This Thanksgiving.
All right, folks.
Little birdie, he don't mind the way he should.
Glad to have you back the afternoon underdogs Thanksgiving week, which means huge rivalry games in college football, including the Governor's Cup, Kentucky and Louisville. It's a phrase used way too often, but our own Nick Coffey went behind enemy lines to talk Kentucky football with the Courier-Journal's John Hale. Boys.
Joining us now to talk about this Governor's Cup matchup is our man John Hale of the CJ, who's been covering Kentucky football for quite some time now. John, I'll start with this. The spread in this game, I think it opened up at Kentucky -3. Last I checked, I think it was -3.5. I don't know how much you followed Louisville this season, other than just kind of knowing sort of where they stand. But you follow Kentucky really closely here. Were you surprised to see the spread open up at what it did?
No, that sounds about right to me, honestly, given the way that Kentucky's offense has struggled over the last, well, basically all of SEC play and the improvements Louisville has made, especially defensively recently. It feels like it should be really close. The question that I don't have an answer to, and I don't know that any of us have an answer to, is how much stock to put in the last three games in the series.
Sure.
Clearly Kentucky, you know, had an offensive line in those games where they could just physically go out and dominate and run the ball and impose their will. Offensive line's their biggest weakness this year. So can they still do that? Or is the narrative that came out of last year's game, when we thought that Louisville had some momentum going into it, was going to be able to close that gap, and after the score was what it was, Mark Stoops is talking about, we play the SEC every week, and that prepares us for a physical kind of game that some of these other leagues don't have to play. Is that actually true? Are we going to see that, you know, where Kentucky can play better offensively against an ACC team than they have so far? I'm skeptical, because they struggled even against MAC teams this year to impose their will, but, you know, I'm not ruling that out. So it wouldn't surprise me if Kentucky won by a couple scores, but I feel like if you're talking about going into it, what the spread should be, I think it should be really close.
I mean, the Kentucky struggles this season. I mean, nobody anticipated this team would be 6-5 at this point, coming off a great season last year. And I think the preseason hype, if you even want to call it that, I mean, they were preseason ranked, and I thought that was fair. I could understand why, given what they did a year ago, what they brought back. Is the offensive line? I mean, you don't want to blame it all on those guys, but it just seems as if that has not only been their biggest weakness, but it seems to be the one real area. Not that maybe they haven't been as solid in other areas. Obviously, play calling on offense has been really criticized in recent weeks. But I mean, how did they get here at 6-5? Just given what the expectations were, and again, I don't think people were wrong. I still look at Kentucky, John, from a personnel standpoint. And I still think they've got some pretty good players. I think they have the edge in talent. How did they end up in this situation with a 3-5 record in the SEC? And, you know, Kentucky going to a bowl game is something that used to be really celebrated. But this was a team that had big-time expectations this year.
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. It starts with the offensive line, obviously. And not only just because the offensive line has struggled in terms of pass blocking and run blocking at times, but kind of the cascading effect of that. Because Will Levis has taken so many hits, he gets injured. You know, has the turf toe. He suffered at Ole Miss that has limited his mobility basically since then. So we have not seen him run the way that, you know, he did in the second half of last season. That's part of it. Because they have so much trouble protecting the pass that, you know, they have to pick their spots in terms of when they're going to let him drop back and throw it down the field, because a lot of times they just don't have time for him to let those routes develop. So kind of that cascading effect, I think, is the biggest X's and O's issue. But I also think it's very fair at this point to take a look at the program as a whole and say so much of their success that they built the last 5 or 6 years was this, you know, chip on your shoulder, Youngstown tough, whatever you want to call it, with Mark Stoops, where every year we'd go to SEC Media Days in July and you could basically write the same story that nobody's picking us and we're out to prove everybody wrong and we don't get any respect. Well, that was not the case this year. Like you said, they were picked second in the East ahead of Tennessee. They were ranked in the preseason top 25 for the fifth time in program history. Everybody spent all summer telling them how good they were. And it's pretty clear at this point that they have not figured out how to handle praise. When you lose, you know, you can look at the individual losses and say, you know, they had a chance to win at Ole Miss, made two critical mistakes in the fourth quarter. Will Levis obviously didn't play against South Carolina. Tennessee was clearly just much better than they were. Georgia's much better than they were. But I think when you look specifically at those South Carolina and Vanderbilt games, the energy level, even without Will Levis in one of them, was just not acceptable. And I think that that says something. Will Levis said it himself after they lost to Vanderbilt. He didn't have any doubts that they would play better against Georgia because they get up for those games against the top-ranked teams where everybody's picking against them. The problem is they haven't figured out how to sustain that same effort, focus, intensity, whatever, against teams that everybody expects them to beat. They play to the level of competition too much. And that's something Mark Stoops is going to have to figure out. I mean, it's not going to be a problem next year because nobody's going to pick them, you know, that high in the summer and tell them they're really good again for a while. But if they want to take that next step as a program and legitimately contend in the East, as long as they, you know, as long as it exists, or become a playoff contender in the expanded playoff field, they're going to have to figure out how to deal with people telling them they're good. And that's something they didn't do very well this year.
John Hale is our guest, joining us here on 790 KRD. One thing it seems that Mark Stoops has certainly figured out really since day one is he has his guys ready to play in this game, this rivalry game. Yeah. I mean, you could even go back to the early days of the Stoops era when Charlie Strong was here and then Petrino, and they were outmatched and they lost a lot of those games early on, but they always came ready to play. I think Louisville's the exact opposite. Scott Satterfield's guys clearly have just been outmatched in these games the two times they've played, but they've also just been a little shell-shocked. They kind of got punked. And what is it about Mark Stoops and that staff that they've been able to establish a culture when it comes to this rivalry? These guys, Louisville could be 1-10, John, and these guys would be fired up and ready to play. And right. I want to know what's in the formula, because that's just not been the case on the Louisville side.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, in the same way that they can play better against a team like Georgia last week than they did against Vanderbilt, it's all about motivation going into it. And they have, you know, made this game really important since they got here. Obviously, I think the recruiting battles help. The fact that, you know, for that 3 or 4 year period, Kentucky was really cleaning up in the city and getting guys like J.J. Weaver and company from Louisville. Not all those guys have panned out by any means, but they made it an important emphasis to go into Louisville and get the best players in the state and take advantage when, you know, Petrino stopped recruiting the city the way he was. That part adds to it, I think. And then, frankly, early on, and, you know, as you mentioned, those early games, Kentucky wasn't very good. So they had to, you know, make something out of nothing and winning your rivalry game or playing well in the rivalry game, at least. Was a way to get some pride at the end of the year and try and build some momentum going into, you know, the recruiting calendar period. And obviously, even though they played well, like you mentioned, they were outmatched early. There were a couple of years in there where they had to beat Louisville to go to a bowl, and they didn't in 15 and 16, or 14 and 15, sorry. 16, they had the huge win, which really, I think, one of the turning points of Mark Stoops' program. The one game where you can really say they got punked themselves was that 17 game with the fight. They just got embarrassed and on and off the field in that game. But since then, it's been kind of a completely different story. And I think developing that physical minded, we're going to run the ball and impose our will, and having players like Benny Snell and Will Levis and Wynn Bowden who feed off that kind of environment, feed off the big game, I think that's been key for them.
Now, Louisville is carrying a little bit of momentum here, and they've been there before. And I think the belief, as I try to check the pulse of the Louisville fan base, is that I think they all know they can lose. I don't think they're surprised they're underdogs, but they feel as if this is a little different than the previous years where they have at least found ways to sort of manufacture some confidence in this matchup. Louisville's defense has been a lot better in recent weeks, and I know that you know, maybe they haven't played a juggernaut-type offense. They just played the third- and fourth-string quarterback for NC State. But I know you follow Kentucky much more closely than Louisville. But how do you assess Louisville going into this game compared to the previous two times?
No, I think it's a much better situation. I mean, you know, just following it from the outside, like you mentioned, I was assuming that, you know, four games into the season or whatever, Scott Satterfield was going to get fired. And to see them turning around the way they did, it reminds you a little bit of that 2016 season for Kentucky, where, you know, three games into the season, they go lose to Southern Miss, blow a lead in their opener, get embarrassed at Florida the second week, are in a shootout against New Mexico State week three, and week four they go to play South Carolina, and, you know, there are all these rumors that Mark Stoops isn't even going to get off the bus that day, that they're going to make a move. And then from that point on, they flip the switch, get to a bowl game that year, and build the momentum. It feels like kind of one of those turning points for Scott Satterfield and the program at Louisville. So I can absolutely understand some more confidence from Louisville fans going into this, especially because their defense has been really good. And you mentioned they haven't played an offensive juggernaut, but let's face it, Kentucky's not an offensive juggernaut right now. I mean, they didn't score more than 21 points in any SEC game this season. They have run the ball at times okay in recent weeks. I mean, Chris Rodriguez has still had some big games, so maybe that's what happens this weekend. They go out and impose themselves. Will Levis did look a little more mobile last week against Georgia than he has in a couple months, so we know what he did with his legs in this game a year ago. I think they still have, you know, really good players who could step up individually and have big games, but it just has not clicked overall for whatever reason for Kentucky. They've had so many struggles in the red zone that if they're playing a good defense, and it seems like Louisville has a good defense at this point, you got to worry about their ability to score points, which makes it, you know, kind of a toss-up game.
Yeah, I really do think it's a big toss-up game. I have a tough time seeing Louisville win when I haven't even seen them be competitive, but I will agree that I think Louisville this year defensively is just different than what we've seen. In fact, not only are they pretty good defensively right now, their defense was horrendous in the last two times they've played. So I look with Kentucky, if they go out there and just, you know, they're better. I mean, I think Kentucky has good personnel. I know the offensive line has been a big question mark, but like, I just still think from a talent perspective, like, I don't think Kentucky is 6-5 because of a talent issue. Would you agree? I mean, you could yeah, reel off, I mean, maybe every unit but the offensive line, where I think they have some pretty damn good players.
No, absolutely. I mean, and Mark Stoops has made the point several times that goes kind of both ways, but, you know, they're theoretically a handful of plays from being 8-2 at this point, or 8-3 after losing to Georgia. I mean, literally, if you don't fumble it twice on two fourth quarter possessions in the red zone at Ole Miss, you get a win there. You know, for as bad as the performance against South Carolina was, you're basically close to a win. If Will Levis is healthy in that game, you're probably going to win there. Vanderbilt, if you don't have a penalty on an interception on the fourth quarter, for as bad as that went, you get a win there. And so, like, they are really close to having a completely different narrative. The SEC is just such a jumbled mess after those top five teams this year that, we see a team like Florida who looks like they're turning around, and then they lose to Vanderbilt last week. I think that's just kind of where the league is now. So definitely it's not a personnel issue. If you want to talk about coaching, if you want to talk about play calling, all of those things contribute to it. But there's, you know, they have a first-round draft pick at quarterback, and he's not played like a first-round draft pick all year, especially because of his injury and his health situation. But he has the ability to do that. And I don't think it would be a shock at all if, you know, he goes out and has a big game this weekend and Berrion Brown and Chris Rodriguez and those guys show out and Kentucky has a really good performance, because they have those kind of players.
I could see a scenario where Kentucky gets the edge here just because they have the edge, in my opinion, in talent. If Louisville does find a way to win this game, is it going to be a similar, I guess, formula that other teams have used against Kentucky, and that's just getting after the quarterback, making Will Levis uncomfortable, taking advantage of the offensive line for Kentucky? I just feel like if that's the scenario where we get to the end of this game and Louisville is won, I feel like that would have to be the, I mean, again, there's always things that have, you know, unexpected things that happen in these rivalry games, but I just feel going in right now, what we know about each team, if it would be Louisville's defense proving that they are, in fact, pretty damn good. They lead the country in sacks, I think. I mean, that's the scenario, right? If, in fact, it's a Louisville win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you get to Will Levis, you force him to make some bad throws. He throws a couple interceptions, which we know he is prone to do at times when it's not going great, when he tries to force things. So that could 100% happen. And then, you know, Kentucky has been so bad in the red zone, especially the last month, that, you know, Louisville stands up in those situations. And Kentucky's field goal kicking and special teams are a disaster at the moment. So certainly you can see some scenarios, because Kentucky has shot themselves in the foot so often this season, those self-inflicted mistakes, where if two or three of those happen, you know, Louisville's definitely good enough to win this game in that kind of way.
All right. I got to ask you about the big news that came out on Sunday. Mark Stoops got a new contract. I don't find it to be that surprising that he is once again getting a new deal, because even though this year's been a letdown, what Mark Stoops has done for the Kentucky football program is really unbelievable, to be honest with you. But the fact that he's going to make more money than John Calipari, he's climbing the ladder as far as one of the highest paid coaches in the sport. I guess that's just the name of the game now for college coaches that schools really value. But does this sort of change how, like, knowing what he makes, or, and I know you don't necessarily keep up with, you know, overall the fan reaction, but will fans sort of now know where, how he's being compensated and simply expect more than what they typically get? I mean, I don't think anybody's going to ask for the guy to, you know, go to the college football playoff, but, you know, the grand scheme of things, I mean, will fans now expect more knowing that they pay this guy what they pay him?
Oh, absolutely. And the timing of this obviously didn't help. That's why they didn't announce it, because they signed it the day before they lost to Vanderbilt, and then they've lost two games since then. So they just kind of snuck it out there on their coaching contract website, which, you know, whatever. He talked about it yesterday and said himself he felt bad about the timing, that he hadn't held up his part of the bargain since then. But even he acknowledges the expectations are much higher. And the contract itself shows that. Look, his previous deal was, you know, arguably the best deal in college sports when you look at it as a whole, because he got a one-year extension every time they won seven games. He got a two-year extension every time they won nine games. Got a $250,000 bonus for every win, starting at number nine in the season. Yeah, Jimmy Sexton, obviously the power agent too, everywhere. Yeah, so like that part of it, I mean, he had a great contract already, but they took away all of those automatic extensions, bonuses. And the bonuses in this current one are get to the college football playoff, get to the semifinals, win the national championship. You know, there is one for a bowl game in there, but like clearly the expectations are higher. This seven wins and you get an automatic extension is not going to happen anymore. Won't matter for a while because, you know, the deal runs through the 2030 season, but that in it of itself shows the expectations are different. And Mark has said that, you know, Mitch Barnhart has said that. Everybody knows that's why fans aren't happy this year. I never really bought in myself that they were a legitimate challenger to Georgia in the East, but I thought they absolutely could have been in position for, you know, a Sugar Bowl, an Orange Bowl, a Cotton Bowl, one of those New Year's Six bowls that goes outside the playoff this year, and they didn't do it, and people are unhappy about it. And the fact that this contract extension came in the middle of all this unhappiness is definitely going to add on the pressure to him to go out in the transfer portal this offseason, address a bunch of these holes that they're going to have going into next year. And, you know, the schedule's more difficult next year, so I don't think it would be a shock. Probably you set the bar at seven wins as a success, but I don't know that that's going to make people happy. They are definitely at the point now where six, seven wins, mid-tier bowls are not going to be enough, and so he's going to feel that.
One more question for you, John. What do you anticipate we see for a crowd on Saturday? I know Louisville fans have not been showing up in the masses this year. I think a lot of that is not just because of the team itself, but I just don't think people go to games like they used to. I'm curious, are you seeing the same thing in Commonwealth? And although it is a rivalry game, weather's not going to be on our side.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be full by any means. I was actually more impressed the last 2 weeks or the last, two home games for Kentucky than I thought I would be. The Vanderbilt game crowd was not great, but the weather was miserable that day. And to have, you know, 50,000 people there was impressive in of itself. Georgia brought a ton of fans to Lexington this weekend, so that certainly helped. I think that, you know, the stadium will be, you know, 80% full or whatever, just because it's a rivalry game, and Kentucky had drawn pretty well before they kind of went in the tank the last 3 weeks or whatever. But you're right. I mean, the attendance trends were going down anyway. The holiday weekend doesn't help. It's going to be cold, and if it rains, that certainly won't help at all. It won't be full, but I think it would be better than maybe the circumstances of knowing Louisville's probably not going to bring a ton of fans because they haven't brought a ton of fans to their home games this year. And the fact that, you know, Kentucky has been struggled so much recently, you might expect a smaller crowd than it'll actually be. But I would be really surprised if it was full.
We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks for having me.